one way or the other about the werewolves coming out. He was precisely the charismatic kind of wolf that Bran planned on introducing the public to first. But making Chastel's murder look as though it was designed to attract human attention was a way to send suspicion elsewhere. There were a lot of wolves who were unhappy about his father's plans. Bran would not believe Charles had killed Chastel, after all, so Arthur needed a nameless villain for Bran to blame, someone who hired the vampires, then conveniently disappeared. That whole butcher thing was Arthur making an observation. Chastel was a barbarian, Arthur clearly his superior. He wouldn't see the similarities. In his mind, a brute who killed for pleasure was uncivilized. Arthur didn't kill for pleasure. Chastel ruled by killing all who challenged his place, and by terrifying the rest. Arthur had started out killing the alphas in Great Britain, then stopped, or found a better way to dispose of the wolves who would challenge him. Bran could figure it out from here. As far as Charles was concerned, Arthur and Chastel were just two sides of the same coin. All the need for power, and none of the need to take care of what was theirs. Arthur wouldn't see it that way, though perhaps he needed to make that more clear with the brutal method used to dispose of Chastel's body. Sonny. If the reason for hiring the vampires was that it would have been difficult for a werewolf to attack an Omega, hiring them to kill your own mate, who was Omega, or nearly so, would have been imperative. And suddenly the attempted kidnapping of Anna made so much more sense. Arthur wasn't the only werewolf to have his own jet, but he did have one. And Anna was what Sonny could have been. Omega, valued not so much because of who she was, but for who everyone else would think her to be. Prize possession. And unlike Sonny, she would live forever. Sonny had been getting old, as humans did. Arthur's pain at that knowledge had been genuine, so he'd had her killed to spare himself the suffering. From his reactions at the warehouse, Charles rather thought Arthur had underestimated the pain of her death. He hoped so. Casually, he pulled his phone out and set it to text.
"Forgot to update Da," he said. "He'll be eating breakfast about now and doesn't like it interrupted. I'll text him about the happenings of tonight, and he can call me about it at his leisure."
No lies for Arthur to hear. He kept the text message simple. It is Arthur. He kept the phone tilted away from Arthur so he'd think he was still texting Bran, and typed out a message for Angus. "Don't call. Send help here. Arthur is villain." He deemed it a little melodramatic, but it was short and simple and impossible for Angus to misinterpret. He hit send. He could handle Arthur. Arthur had not been wolf enough to take Chastel. But Anna and Alan Chu were here, and they needed him to keep them safe as best he could. And that meant calling in help.
"You were looking for lockpicks," said Arthur.
"Yes.
I have some in there." Arthur tipped his head to indicate his treasure room. "I've been packing things up. I won't be coming back here."
Charles followed him in. It looked as if Arthur had been doing exactly as he said. The tapestries were off the wall, set into 2x4 frames to keep them stable, and slid into the kind of plywood rough lumber shipping crate museums use to transport artwork. A smaller wooden crate had already been sealed. The only thing left out was the box that held the sword.
"I understand the rest," Charles said, running his fingers over the wood that protected the old sword. "But how did you bribe Dana into breaking her word?"
He looked up and watched Arthur go very still. The British wolf altered subtly, lost the aura of grief almost entirely.
"The same way I got the vampires to do my bidding. Offered her something she wanted." Arthur smiled. "Even that wouldn't have worked if you hadn't ticked her off."
"How did I do that?"
As soon as Charles asked the question, he remembered Dana's extreme reaction to the painting his father had sent her. It was lost, that place that had once been hers, and his father meant to gift her with a remembrance. But maybe she'd thought it was a taunt instead. Arthur threw up his hands theatrically.
"How should I know? Fae are easily offended. As for what I offered her,
He motioned to the sword case.
That is not Excalibur, Charles said. When she discovers you don't have it, she'll be... offended.
Arthur ran his fingers gently over the display case and slid open a dark chunk of wood on the end. There is something to be said about hiding things in plain sight. The sword he removed from the hidden compartment wasn't the one that had been on display, though it looked very like. Both were swordsmen's weapons rather than movie props. As soon as this once-hidden sword left the case, the hair on the back of Charles's neck came to attention. Excalibur or not, there was no denying that the sword in Arthur's hand was a fey blade. He could feel its magic on his skin. He could smell it. Arthur was a swordsman, Charles knew. He'd studied fencing and had received the same sort of martial training that Charles himself had. Arthur's balance was right, and his grip, neither too tight nor too loose, showed all that training had not been wasted. He hadn't been worried about a sword. But that sword? Charles was a dead man, most likely. But Angus would be coming with help. Enough help that even with the sword, Anna should be safe. All he had to do was delay as long as possible, and Arthur always had loved to perform.
Anna won't go with you, he told Arthur. She won't stand by your side. She'll wait until you take your attention off her for a moment, then she'll gut you.
Arthur smiled.
You really don't believe in reincarnation, do you? Or fate? I came here to kill Chastel and your father.
Chastel I had an answer for.
For your father? I needed more.
Why my father?
Arthur looked at him as though he was stupid.
Because I am he, of course. King Arthur. It is my destiny to be the High King.
Madness indeed, thought Charles.
But my father didn't come.
No, agreed Arthur. Fate is an old thing. Do you know just who Dana is?
Obviously you were going to tell me, said Charles dryly.
I wonder if your father does. This is what I mean by fate, that I, who was Arthur, would find Nimue, the Lady of the Lake, here. I knew a couple of decades ago that she was here in Seattle. The first time I saw her, in fact. I knew that there would come a time that it was important. So I bought Sunny this house.
Obviously, Charles thought, it wasn't going to be hard to keep Arthur monologuing. Arthur's smile turned sly.
I didn't find Excalibur in an archaeological dig, though that's what I was doing at the time. At Cambridge, I made friends with a boy whose family was old Cornish gentry. He invited me home for Christmas. I discovered that they'd been guarding a treasure for so many generations that they'd forgotten all about it. It took me to find it again. It was hidden under the flagstone in the carriage house. A sword in the stone, so to speak.
He laughed at his own cleverness.
The boy's older sister looked enough like Dana to be her twin.
With his free hand, he rubbed his thumb over his first two fingers.
A little research and insight becomes knowledge. So I knew when I saw Dana, I had the perfect thing to bribe her with.
He swung the sword gently.
She had no idea it wasn't resting beneath the stone where she'd placed it until I showed it to her.
A photograph. I'm not stupid. I could disagree with you on that, Charles said. You've done a number of stupid things that I could pick out. But trying to get the best of a Grey Lord is the stupidest by far. You never had any intention of giving her the sword.
Arthur bobbed his head, a polite agreement.
The first deal would have been honest. Excalibur isn't the only thing I discovered there. I had other weapons, you know. I offered her the dagger. She refused, and made it clear she would hunt me to the ends of the earth, I believe. I know her, you see, but she doesn't know me. Doesn't believe I am Arthur.
Charles knew which Arthur he was talking about.
But my father didn't come.
No, you did. And you brought her with you.
Her?
Guinevere, my white lady.
And then Arthur proved that he wasn't as stupid as Charles had started to believe. Because without telegraphing his move by so much as a breath, while Charles was still absorbing the idea that Arthur wanted Anna because he thought she was his, Arthur struck. The sword in his stomach didn't hurt, just robbed Charles of his strength, of his ability to move. He heard Anna cry out, but his attention was on the icy cold that was sucking him down. As his legs collapsed, Arthur followed him down. "A swift fight," Arthur said, "is the best kind of fight. I know you. When your father didn't come, I was so disappointed. But when I saw her, saw my Guinevere, I knew." He grimaced. "She was mine, and you had her, just like before. I could have killed you cleanly, you know. But I want you to suffer, Lancelot." "There was no Lancelot, fool." For a moment, Charles thought that he'd said those words. He'd thought them so hard. But the voice was a woman's. Dana. Arthur jerked the sword free and stumbled back until he regained his feet. As soon as the steel left his body, the coldness dissipated. Charles put a hand to his belly to staunch the bleeding. It hadn't gone all the way through. Arthur had wanted him to suffer, so if he could keep from bleeding to death, Brother Wolf could heal them. The wound was small enough to heal fast. "Sharp steel," Brother Wolf told him. "Cuts swiftest, hurts least, heals soonest." Charles gave the pack magic a little tug and received a bounty in return. He wasn't the Alpha, but his father could grant him help if he chose, and Bran was a generous leader. Pain faded. No need to advertise that he was not dying, though, not yet. He stayed collapsed, out of the way. "Don't pay attention to me. I'm not a threat." Charles could become less noticeable if he had to, though not as well as Bran. His Da had the technique perfected. It is easier to go unnoticed, Bran liked to say, when everyone is focused on something else. "Give me the sword," she said.
"She is my sword," Arthur said, taking a tighter grip and pulling the point up into a guard position. "Mine from the first. She came to my hand from yours, and when I died, it was not I who gave her back."
Dana moved into Charles's view. She dropped the glamour, or adopted a new one. It wasn't so much that she changed anything, but she had become more. And Anna was right. She was riveting. Good. Keep Arthur's attention. Charles moved his hand, and when blood didn't pour out, moved his shirt and looked at the scab. Too fresh to move yet, but soon.
"You stole it," Dana said, her voice low and fierce. "It is not yours. It was never yours. The king may indeed come again. It was foretold, but that is not you. Has never been you. You are not Arthur." "You are not meant to know me," Arthur told her. "And we are quit of our bargain. Chastel didn't kill Charles, as you promised. And when Charles defeated the Frenchman, you were unable to find another way to kill him, to kill Charles. You failed. I owe you nothing."
She lifted her hand.
"Caladbog. Caladfwe. Excalibur. I have delivered it to the hands of great men, fighters, heroes all. Your hands profane it. A coward who hires his death and kills those better, smarter, stronger than he." "You can't take it from me," Arthur said. "Not unless you kill Charles. And you cannot harm me as long as Charles still lives. I know how fey bargains work."
"I wouldn't be so confident if I were you, Arthur," thought Charles. "I thought my father had worked out a bargain with her. And look what happened to us. Excalibur meant more to her than her word, and it still does." "Fine," she said, and flung out a hand. And Charles had the very odd experience of seeing himself fall all the way to the floor while he sat and watched, which was better than the vision he had briefly had of himself falling dead.
"You can't kill like that," said Arthur,
his voice breaking with sudden fear. He raised the sword between them as if the blade could hold off fey magic, which, if it were Excalibur, and that appeared to be nearly certain, it might possibly do. Arthur was right, thought Charles, as he got to his feet. Dana couldn't kill like that, but she could fling illusions of death all day long. His wound was still sore, but unlikely to open up and let him bleed to death when he moved.
"Can I not?" Dana asked.
What do you know of the Fae? Not as much as you believe, I think. If the bargain is complete, give me the sword. While she kept Arthur occupied, Charles pad-footed over to the display case. The sword left there was not Excalibur, but it was a fine sword. A replica, he thought, created a long time ago to protect the original. He tore the box open and took the sword to use it for the purpose for which it had been forged. Arthur spun to see what the noise was, and, from his face, he could now see Charles. Either the noise had broken the illusions, or Dana had let them drop.
Arthur Madden, Charles said formally, for murder of innocents on the Merrocks' territory, you have been found guilty and condemned to death.
He didn't have to say anything more, because Arthur raised the sword and came for him. Arthur might have had years of martial arts behind him, but Charles had been trained by his father, a man who had actually used a sword like this to stay alive. Charles was stronger and faster, and Arthur was afraid of him. All that said, Charles had never actually used a sword in real combat before.
Remember, the memory of his Da's voice echoed in his ears, wolves are not human. If you engage another wolf and hit his blade full strength, you're going to destroy your sword. If you need to preserve your weapon, turn blows away and strike body, not metal.
His brother's voice chimed in helpfully. Avoidance is better than a block, less risky. So Charles slipped away from the first strike Arthur aimed at him. He kept both feet on the floor, ghosting over the hardwood. Rat-stepping allowed him to strike with better balance and to shift direction faster. The room was small, the swords were short. It meant there was little chance to disengage, and fighting was done close range.
You're dead, Arthur said. I killed you. You stabbed me with steel and gloated overly much, Charles murmured, keeping his mind on saving his sword,
sliding blocks, moving aside, turning, letting Arthur do the work for the moment. It visibly unnerved the British wolf when he didn't hit anything, so Charles concentrated on not being there when Arthur's sword snaked out.
I heal pretty damn fast from small wounds like that.
No need to mention pack magic. Let Arthur eat fear. Charles was aware of Dana, who had moved back from the actual fight until she stood just outside the room. He'd made the command decision to ignore her. She was not an ally, not anymore, but it was to her advantage if he won this fight. He didn't care if she took Excalibur. She might have broken her word, but he, and more important, his mate, had taken no direct harm from it. Brother Wolf was inclined to hold her somewhat responsible for Anna's wound, but all Dana might have done to avert that was tell him about Arthur. Arthur was losing it. The smooth, practiced attacks became random and unfocused. Charles stepped up his pace, no longer just dodging interleaved with intermittent blocks. He also began to weave in attacks. Two strikes from the left, and a turn, and block. Right, left, right, down, and again. Patterns practiced and refined for years, never forgetting that Arthur's sword was probably less damage-prone. Arthur failed to completely block a strike, and a long red line appeared across his chest. The pain of it, or perhaps the fear, lent sudden impulsion to Arthur's return strike, and he hit the other blade squarely. Charles's sword shattered. He let the energy from Arthur's blow spin him around. He ducked around Arthur's unarmed left side and rolled behind, drawing the fillet knife from the back of his pants. With all the force he could muster, he stabbed Arthur in the spine, just where it connected with the skull. And the knife, being an expensive, well-crafted tool, slid between bone, through the softer disc, and severed the spinal cord. Arthur fell forward, his sword rolling away from his hands. Arthur said, before he lost the ability to speak. Charles picked up the Fey blade and severed the British wolf's neck entirely. Then, blade in his hand, he looked at Dana.
Did you know he was going to kill his mate?
He asked. She smiled apologetically. He held the sword hostage.
Not an answer, he told her. But I suppose the life of a human does not matter. Not to you. They are short-lived anyway. What was her life worth? Or Chastel's? He was a monster, right? What were their lives worth when measured against a sword such as this?
Sarcasm does not suit you, Dana said with dignity.
No,
Charles said.
I suppose not. He hired you to kill my father?
She nodded. I refused until he offered me Excalibur. She was entrusted to me. She's the reason for my existence. And this fool had found her.
And my father didn't come.
While he had the sword, she would talk to him, and Charles wanted to know exactly what she'd done so he could inform his father. No, I knew Bran wouldn't. The elements told me so. But I had to find a reason for that fool to bring Excalibur to me. His fortress in Cornwall is guarded against Fae. I needed him to bring her here. I intended to make no bargains with Arthur. Just get the sword back.
You would not have killed my father.
Not if he stayed in Montana. And he did stay in Montana, didn't he? But then you chose to come in his stead. And you brought something with you that Arthur wanted more than he wanted your father's death. I was to engineer matters, so Chastel killed you. It would have accomplished two things. Ensured that Chastel was not at his lethal best when Arthur's assassins came to call, and your death would leave your mate free for Arthur's claiming. Charles took a deep breath. He had no grounds to convict her of wrongdoing. She had killed no one, spilled no blood, not even Arthur's. Intent was not enough for him to act against her, nor was his dislike of her moral compass. Suddenly, urgently, he wanted nothing so much as a shower to rinse off the blood, sweat, and dirty deeds of this night. He opened his hand until he held the sword's hilt by two fingers and held it out to her.
This is yours, he admitted to the theft. Take better care of it this time.
She took it with her left hand, and her knuckles whitened as she sighed like a lover satisfied at last. She held out her right hand. No hard feelings? He looked at the hand and felt no urge to take it. He had hard feelings aplenty. Please, she said. He took her hand.
My father will talk to you about this. You broke your word to him.
Her hand tightened on his, and she looked down. I know. I know. And I can't have that. No one must know. If no one knows, it will be all right.
You understand.
For the second time that night, Charles found himself on his knees, with very little idea of how it had happened. He looked at his hand, still in Dana's grip, blue patterns ghosted down his arm from her hand. As he collapsed fully on his side, the pain began, but he couldn't open his mouth.
If you had been human, you would already be dead, Dana said.
She brushed a strand of hair that had escaped his braid away from his face.
This will take longer, but it will leave no traces that can be followed.
Your father will suspect, doubtless, but as long as no one knows my part, it will be fine. She bent down and kissed him on the cheek.
I do like you, Charles. I would never have made a bargain with Arthur to slay you, but that I owe your death to your father. He gave me a reminder of that which I can never regain. I only hope to return the same to him, as I promised you I would.
Brother Wolf growled, but the pain kept them motionless on the hard floor.
Tell her we're about 14 minutes out, Angus said as soon as he answered the phone. And as tempting as it is, I won't be driving randomly around the block. So I suspect the next time she makes you call, we'll be 13 minutes out.
Alan had been holding his phone out to make sure Anna heard it.
Yes, sir, he said,
and ended the call.
Anna knew she should apologize, but it was beyond her. Once they realized that the noise they'd heard a few minutes after Charles had closed the door was a locking mechanism, and that the room they were in was as secure a place to hold werewolves as she'd ever seen, they discovered Alan's phone didn't work. It had taken them a while to find the stupid black box that had kept Alan's cell phone from calling out, a cell phone disruptor. When they called Angus, he'd already been on his way, alerted by a text message from Charles. The Merrock was about 30 minutes out of Seattle. He'd had a bad feeling earlier and when Charles hadn't answered his phone. Bran had climbed aboard the jet and headed to Seattle. At this rate, Anna thought, he'd beat Angus here. It had been 10 minutes since the noise, identified as a sword fight by Alan, had stopped. 8 minutes since Charles had shut down their bond so tightly that all she could tell was that he was nearby and not moving. Her wounds had closed, though there were a few itchy spots and a couple of sore places. She'd grabbed a sheet and wrapped it around her like an impromptu dress. As she paced, the short lengths of chains that dangled from her wrists and ankles made cheerful sounds that annoyed her. They probably annoyed Alan worse, but he didn't say so. 16 minutes after their last call, the door unlocked.
Sorry, Tom said. We had a little trouble finding the electronic lock. It was in the room with Arthur's body.
Charles?
Moira's looking after him, Tom said.
Anna found Charles lying on his side in Arthur's trophy room, amidst a scattering of steel shards, blood, and gore. Moira was kneeling beside him, with both of her hands on his bare shoulder. I have him stabilized right now, but it's not going to stay that way. Someone put a death curse on him. He's fighting it, and I'm helping.
Anna looked at his face. He wasn't unconscious, and every muscle of his body was tight, the veins standing out as if he were lifting weights.
How do we stop it?
Anna asked, not recognizing her own voice. She knew enough about magic to keep her hands off.
Find out who put it on him and make them take it off, Moira said. Or kill them. Can you tell who did it?
Moira shook her head.
This is a new one to me. I can't even tell if it's witchcraft, fey, or some sort of werewolf trick. It's too entwined with his magic, and his magic is something I've never encountered.
His mother was an Indian shaman's daughter, said Angus.
And his father is witchborn, said Anna, without considering if it was something Bran would want bandied about.
Witchborn meant Charles had a lot more magic than the average werewolf. Maybe that would help Moira keep him alive. She looked around the room, trying to put together what might have happened so she could figure out how to fix it. A broken sword, a kitchen knife, Arthur dead, magic. The vampires had been able to use magic, and there was one vampire left, or it might have been the fey woman.
How long? She asked Moira. Until I can't hold it anymore, the witch told her. An hour. Maybe two.
The Marok's coming, Angus sounded grim. If anyone can fix this, he can.
There had been only one fight in this room, Charles and Arthur's. Whoever had taken Charles down was someone who'd taken him by surprise, something the vampire would never have managed. She needed to think, needed to find whoever was hurting Charles and kill them.
If Charles was right when he sent you that text and Arthur was the villain, then Arthur had her killed, Anna said. His own mate.
Or the person who bespelled Charles, Angus said.
She looked at the neat cut that had sliced through Arthur's neck, execution style, Charles style. She didn't argue with Angus, but her wolf was certain Arthur had killed his wife.
I'm going to see if I can find some clothes.
You and Sonny are about the same size, said Angus. I don't think she'd mind you borrowing her clothes.
She followed the scent of death into Sonny's room. Ignoring the body laid out on the bed, she went to the chest of drawers and grabbed a pair of bright pink sweats and a t-shirt. After dressing, she slipped on socks and Sonny's tennis shoes, which, wonder of wonders, fit like a glove. Anna started out the door, paused, and looked at the dead woman.
My husband took care of your killer.
Sonny's mouth opened and sucked in air. Anna froze.
The dead woman said, Anna Latham Cornick, mate of Charles Cornick, Omega of the Aspen Creek Pack. Wolf. Sister, daughter, lover, beloved.
Sonny's eyes opened, filmed over and dead, and her head turned until they looked straight at Anna.
She who was Nimue, Lady of the Lake, and is now Dana Shay, has broken faith, broken her word. She must be punished. And you we have chosen as the instrument of our justice. We gift you with finding, and with this.
Sonny's hand lifted, and in it was a dagger with a blade a few inches longer than her forearm. The handle was bone or ivory. It was difficult to tell.
Take Conwenan as the means, your mate's life as the reason, our Gesh as the cost, true love your reward. Remind her of the wild hunt.
Anna made no move to touch the dagger.
Who are you? We are the Grey Lords. The one who makes the dead talk is she who takes the dead of the battlefield.
Sunny's body jerked. The dagger fell from her hand to the bed.
Hurry, or he will die, and you will be left with justice and vengeance, your only reward.
Sunny's eyes closed, and her body was once more just a body. Anna reached over and took the dagger, part of her waiting for Sunny to grab her wrist, but nothing happened until she touched the dagger. Then magic curled up her hand, first warming her skin where it touched the dagger, then cooling it. A gift of finding, the Grey Lords had said, and a reward of true love.
Where is Dana Shea? She said.
And she knew. Chapter 13. She took the stairs in two jumps and ran out the door, brushing past Tom and ignoring Angus's shout. She ran past the parked cars and out into the street, turning down toward the water. Of course Dana would be headed toward the water.
Where are you going?
Tom asked, running beside her.
Carwen in the Means, Anna told him, showing him the dagger.
He stumbled once, but caught up to her.
Face it, he said.
The Grey Lords, Anna agreed. Carwen in the Means, justice the cause, true love the reward, their gesh the cost.
Zapped, he said, pulling out his cell phone.
Yeah, Angus, the Fae got to her. Best I can figure they're sending Anna out after Dana. Can't think they'd be concerned with the vampire who escaped, and he's the only other player in this. She's speaking gobbledygook, but it sounds to me like maybe they've promised her it'll save Charles.
Stay with her. Help her if you can. Angus sounded frustrated. He's gonna kill me if something happens to her.
Charles? Anna asked through the haze that kept her running away from him.
Yes, him too. Though I was talking about Bran.
She made an impatient sound.
Charles is still with us, Angus said. Moira says if Dana did this, that probably it'll stop with her death. But Fae are hard to kill.
Oh, I think that the dagger they gave Anna will kill a Fae, all right, Tom said. Stinks to high heaven of magic. And it has a name. Fae things that have a name will usually kill just about anything. Do you know of a dagger called Carwellan?
Angus repeated the question for the only one at Arthur's house who couldn't just listen in to the whole conversation.
Moira, do you know of a dagger called Carwellan?
Carwenan? Moira squeaked.
Probably, Tom said the other.
Carwenan was King Arthur's dagger. Little white hilt, it means. Arthur used it to hunt the very Black Witch.
It has a white hilt, observed Tom. Doesn't look all that little to me. About as long as her forearm, almost enough to be a short sword instead of a dagger.
It couldn't have been too little, said Moira, when Tom's reply had been repeated for her. He supposedly cut the witch in half with it.
Anna saw Tom look at the dagger again.
Yes, he said. I think it might be good for something like that.
Keep safe, Angus told him.
Remember, Moira said urgently, never trust the Fae.
Anna frowned.
The troll told us that.
Told you what?
Tom asked. But Anna was more concerned with finding Dana than in repeating herself. A paved trail broke off from the road, and Tom caught her arm, pulling her to a stop.
Anna, are we going to Dana's boat?
I don't know, she told him, and pointed her finger. That way.
We could have taken a car, you know,
he said, folding his cell phone closed with one hand and stuffing it into a pocket. He was wrong.
No, no car.
His eyebrows lowered.
Of course not. Fairy magic, eh? Cold iron?
He took a good look at her wrist manacles.
I would have thought those would keep you safe.
I have to go, she told him intensely. Now!
This is the Burke Gilman Trail, he told her. If you're headed to Dana's boat, this trail goes right by her dock. It's a more direct route than running down the road, and we're much less likely to attract interest with that thing. Not many people out on a jogging path in the middle of winter at this hour of the morning.
Then he let her go. Let her decide. She ran down the trail, stretching her legs and letting the hunt take her. Wild hunt. It was early morning, but the darkness still kept watch over them. Darkness and the faintest sliver of the moon. It was almost the time of the dark of the moon, she thought, but there was still light to hunt by tonight. They were nearly to the docks when the gesh faded. She could see Dana's houseboat, but was able to force her legs to walk.
Once she had slowed, it wasn't such a hard thing to stop altogether. The manacles were doing the trick, she thought, because it seemed like her hands and feet returned to her control before any other part of her body. Tom? Anna asked, panting.
Oh, praise to the Virgin Mother, he said. You're back with me.
Magic, she said.
Right, what happened to him?
She told him, speaking faster as her tongue started working right again.
Dead body's talking, eh? He said. Nasty.
Then he called Moira, and Anna told the story to the witch, and presumably all the werewolves gathered around the phone.
She who takes the dead, Moira sounded exhausted. That would probably be one of the Morrigan, Babd, or maybe Nimain, probably not Macha. Sorry, you don't need that. My concentration shot. They want you to kill Dana. Why?
She broke her word, Angus said. Now she's got to be an example. I don't like them using Anna to do it.
Wild Hunt, Anna said. They called the Wild Hunt. I think that's what they said. Some of it was a little difficult to interpret. It sounded like the hunt was just to be me.
They sent a wolf stuck in human form with a dagger, however enchanted, after a woman who is a Grey Lord, Angus said heavily to whoever else was listening, or maybe just to himself. I don't think she was meant to succeed.
She is Nimue, the Lady of the Lake. Brother Wolf spoke to her in clear words for the first time. His voice sounded like Charles, but not quite, and it thundered through their bond. After the words, he added a flood of information that had no words. Pain that he tried to keep veiled from her, not hiding it, but protecting her from it. The dagger was part of a treasure stolen by Arthur, including Excalibur, which Dana now had. Worry and command, she was to return to Arthur's apartment and wait for the Marok. She was to stay away from Dana. He thought she was being used to return the dagger to Dana for safekeeping. He thought she was only a warning, meant to be destroyed after she delivered her message. And then Brother Wolf was gone again, and the bond felt weaker.
Never trust the Fae, Anna said.
She believed Brother Wolf, but she was the only one who had heard him, thank goodness, or they would not let her do what she needed to do.
Moira, how is Charles? Not good.
She knew that, felt it, while Brother Wolf communicated with her.
How long does he have? I can help for maybe 15 minutes more, and then it's just a matter of time. He's in a lot of pain, I think, and that doesn't help.
If he had died before you got there, would you have been able to tell what had killed him? That it was a death curse? That a fae had laid it upon him?
No, Moira told her. I can't tell who laid it upon him now. If he were dead, probably no one could even tell for certain that it was magic that killed him. If Charles hadn't still been fighting it...
And Dana had no way to know that Angus and I both know that she's broken her word to Bran. She would have thought Charles was the only one. She was talking to herself. How far out is the Marok? She wasn't even sure Bran could help. She'd learned he wasn't infallible, just scary.
He'll be landing at SeaTac in 10 minutes.
Not soon enough, Anna said.
She ended the call.
What are you planning? Tom asked.
I think that's too cerebral a name for it, she told him. I'm playing it by ear. But I think this is Charles's only chance.
It was meant to be her death. Charles was dying. The phone rang. Tom looked down at it.
Angus, he might tell us to go ahead.
And if he doesn't?
Tom turned his phone off.
Do we go in together, or do you want me as backup?
She thought about it.
She liked men. I think that this might go better if you come with me.
She looked again.
But let me borrow your jacket.
People underestimated her all the time. Maybe the Grey Lords had, too. The water was black under the floating dock, and Anna had no desire whatsoever to play. She knocked at the door, glad for Tom at her back.
Who is it?
Dana's voice sounded as if she were standing beside them.
You know who it is, said Anna, not bothering to raise her voice. Dana could hear her.
I have something for you. A gift? A warning? It depends upon you.
I'm in the studio.
The door opened. Anna led the way through the boat and up the stairs to the studio. The lights were on, and otherwise the scene was very much like the one the Fae had set the first time Anna had been here. She was working on a painting that Anna could not see. The painting the Merrock had sent was hung on the left-hand wall, all by itself. A sword leaned casually against the same wall, but closer to the far side of the room than to the middle. It looked very much like the one Arthur had shown her, had claimed to be Excalibur. From what Brother Wolf told her, this one was likely to be the real thing. Its duplicate was shattered all over Arthur's treasure room, having spent itself defending her mate.
The Grey Lords sent me here to attempt to kill you, Anna told the Fey woman, who had not looked up from her painting. Brother Wolf thinks I'm a messenger, Anna continued. Sent here to warn you that if you do this again, the Wild Hunt itself will be sent to you. He believes I've been sent to bring you their gift, and for you to kill. She took a deep breath. And I think he is right.
The Fey looked up from her painting. She was beautiful. Not a cold, flawless beauty, but striking. This was a woman who would be terrible in her anger and fierce in battle. Anna felt the same fascination for Dana that had hit her the very first time she'd seen her. Anna took a deep breath and closed her right hand over the steel manacle on her left wrist. When she looked again, Dana was still beautiful, but Anna didn't feel as though she was being sucked into her beauty anymore. Dana smiled, as if Anna's struggles amused her.
Who is Brother Wolf?
A friend. Anna didn't want to give Dana anything she might use.
I was meant to come here and attack you, but they didn't count on the little present Arthur's vampires left me with.
She showed Dana one of her wrist manacles, and she shook one foot to make the chains jingle.
Their failure left me with a few options,
and you as well.
If I had attacked you and you killed me, you would be in their power, wouldn't you?
I am a Grey Lord. I answer to no one.
When Charles dies, when you kill me, the Merrock would hunt you down. You'd be forced to die or leave this continent, to go back to Europe, to be under their thumbs.
Dana's lips thinned with anger and, Anna's nose told her, a wisp of fear.
You said you brought me a gift?
Dana was just trying to change the subject, Anna judged, but Anna was in control of the conversation.
You didn't know, she said, sounding with some effort relatively sympathetic, when you cursed Charles, that we all knew you broke your word to protect the wolves attending this conference, did you? I saw, Angus saw, and we told Bran and Charles. Not enough for an accusation, but more than enough that if Charles died of unnatural causes, Bran would look right at you.
The Fae put down her paintbrush and used it as an excuse to look away, but Anna could tell a lot more from scent than she could from her expression anyway. The scent of panic was an old friend. She wasn't afraid of Anna. She was afraid of the Merrock.
Good.
Hopefully, it would be enough. Anna strolled around the painting until she stood only a couple of feet from Dana.
Nimue, Lady of the Lake, Anna said, calling upon the part of her that soothed and calmed. Take the curse off my husband. My word on it that no word of your deceit makes its way out into the world.
And my word is good, she thought, but she didn't say it.
The Merrock will not hunt you, nor harrow you out of his lands.
The Fae stared at the painting on the easel. Picasso was a wiser choice than Vermeer, Anna thought inconsequentially. Not even experts could agree on what Picasso was trying to say with his paintings. No one could tell Dana she'd gotten it wrong.
No, said Dana, her voice thick with rage. She raised her hand and pointed it at the painting, not hers, but the one on the wall, the Merrock's gift. I have not hurt so in 1,000 years. Look what he did to me. Every time I look at that, it feels as it did the day I had to leave it. I vowed before the both of you that I would repay him in kind, that he would pay and pay in the same way I do, with the same sorrow.
I lost my home. He loses his son. I will go back to Europe, and he will...
Anna stabbed her with the dagger she'd concealed in Tom's jacket, under the ribs and through the heart, just like her favorite forensic TV show had taught her. The Fae's eyes flashed surprise just for an instant, before there was nothing in them at all. No was the wrong answer, Anna informed her. Don't move, said Tom, and he used the sword that had been sitting against the wall. Anna pulled the dagger out of the body and cleaned it with a rag Dana had on the small table with her paints, trying to avoid thinking about what had just happened, and failing miserably. That's 6 headless bodies this trip, she said, hating that her voice shook. And I'm not counting the first 2 vampires we killed, because their bodies are dust. 6 is just a bit much, don't you think?
Maybe she'd have stayed dead, Tom told her. I don't know much about killing Fae. Cold iron is supposed to do the trick, and that dagger's got plenty of that. Nice, sharp, cold iron. But I for damn sure didn't want to run into her ever again after this, so there's no harm in making sure.
Would you call? Had she been in time? Did it even work? Was Charles dying while she stood here? Tom took the bloody rag from her and wiped the sword clean with a few efficient swipes. Then he handed it to her and pulled out his cell.
Hey, Moira, he said. How's Charles?
Better. Moira sounded half dead. Not good. Not good by a long shot. But the curse dissipated a few minutes ago. He'll make it.
That's what happens when an Omega goes negotiating, Angus commented. Even the Fae can't stand against one.
Tom looked down at Dana's body.
Just so, he said. Though I don't know that anyone expected exactly this result.
The troll, in his guise as a street person, was waiting for them just outside the door. He was leaning against the boat, smoking a cigarette and watching his feet. Tom stepped in front of Anna.
Well, said the troll, soft-voiced. I guess that showed him. Wasn't no one thought you had it in you, lady. Most especially that one.
He tilted his head at the boat. She was going to kill my mate. The troll nodded.
And yourself, too, sounded like. She should have known that some people take things like the killing of mates right to heart, all right.
He stubbed the cigarette out on his thumb and tossed it into the water.
I'm supposed to take possession of the...
Anna stepped around Tom and held out the dagger in one hand and the sword in the other. They aren't mine, she said. I don't want them. The troll stepped back, then had to do some fancy footwork to keep from falling in the water.
Don't you be wishing those on me, don't you? I'm supposed to take possession of the body. We'll see to it Ms. Dana Shea doesn't get discovered.
He seemed calmer once Anna let her hands drop and quit holding out the weaponry.
That's better there, see. Now I'm supposed to ask you to watch over those a little bit longer. Someone will be along to collect them later. Someone else.
And just in case she hadn't gotten it, he said,
someone not me.
All right, Anna said. Agreed. He pulled off the old trench coat he was wearing.
Happen you might want to bundle things up in here. It'll keep them out of sight. A little magic, and a lot of material.
She bit back a thank you. Tom, who took the coat, didn't seem to have the same trouble.
I'll see that the coat goes to whoever gets the weapons, Tom said instead. Maybe they can return it.
The troll nodded once and went into the boat.
Troll, said Tom thoughtfully, and knocked twice on the side of the boat with his knuckles. I don't suppose I needed to cut the head off after all. Bon appetit.
They were maybe halfway back, although Anna was stumbling tired, so her estimate of distance could have been way off, when she noticed an expensive but anonymous car purring at a junction between the path they were on and a cross street.
I see it, said Tom, moving between her and the car.
Very conscious of what she was carrying, Anna didn't protest. She didn't want the sword, but there were a lot of people she didn't want to have the sword either. like the vampire who'd gotten away. She dropped back a dozen feet and let Tom take the lead. If only the sword had been a gun. She knew how to use a gun. The back door of the car opened, and Bran got out. Tom didn't look relieved. So Anna broke into what was supposed to be a run, but came out as a faster shuffle.
It's good. It's good. Tom, meet Bran Cornick, the Marok. Bran, this is Tom. I don't remember his last name, but he saved my life.
Tom Franklin,
Bran said. Thank you.
Anna.
He shook his head.
Words fail me.
Here.
She shoved the coat with sword and dagger at Bran.
You take these. I don't want them. Someone is supposed to come pick them up later.
Ah, he said, and looked down at the battered material.
Seattle is not the place I would have expected to encounter these.
He seemed to know what he held, even though they were both still wrapped up. Tom grinned.
Seattle is a city with a certain panache. Never know what you're going to find when you come for a visit. Good food, friendly people, ancient, legendary weapons. Always something different.
Get in the car, Bran told him. They're all on the way to Angus's house.
Charles? Anna couldn't help but sound anxious.
He wanted to come with me, Bran said, but I told him he'd have to wait until he could walk under his own power. He's on his way to Angus's if he's not already there.
He got in the car, and Anna slid in next to him, leaving the window seat for Tom. Bran gave her a laughing glance.
He wasn't happy with me, or you either. Expect him to yell at you because you scared him badly this time.
Sounds unfair to me, Anna said, though it didn't bother her.
I risk my neck to save him and he yells at me?
Charles was alive. He could yell at her all he wanted to.
If it gets to you, just shed a few tears, muttered Tom. He'll shut up. Works for Moira.
Arthur's dead. Dana is dead. 5 of the 6 vampires are dead, Anna said. There's only one villain left.
We don't have to worry about the vampire who escaped, Bran told her. The local vampires found him and took care of it. They are apparently sending Angus proof.
Good, said Tom. Good was the wrong word, Anna thought. Good shouldn't apply to headless bodies and dead people. But she didn't have a better word. Anna had to ask,
Bran, could you have done anything to stop the Fae from killing Charles? Should I have waited for you?
Did I just kill unnecessarily? He must have heard her unspoken worry.
In human courts, the least of the charges facing Dana would have been conspiracy to commit murder. Charles confirms that she knew Arthur planned on killing Sonny, Jean Chastel, Charles. She was in the process of killing Charles. That's attempted murder.
He shook his head.
Do not regret her death.
She was the Lady of the Lake, Anna said in a small voice.
And being famous should have made her immune to the consequences of her actions?
He pulled her head toward him and kissed her forehead.
Ego te absolvo. There is some Latin for you, my dear. I absolve you of your guilt. You did well. The only way I could have stopped her was the same way you did. And I would have been too late.
De duobus malis, minus est semper elegendum, she murmured. Her death was the lesser evil.
Charles sat in lone splendor on a huge couch in the middle of Angus's spacious living room, while the other 10 or 12 people present made themselves at home on the other side of the room. Anna surveyed the scene.
Okay, she said. Who's been being a grouch?
He looked at her. For such a look, she thought, she'd have done a lot more than kill. He patted the couch beside him, but she crawled into his lap instead.
I've had a really bad night, she said. Any chance we can get some sleep?
Charles kissed her, a long, involved kiss that took no prisoners. When he was finished, she licked her lips and said in a voice that was a little breathless,
Does that mean no?
I would slay dragons for you, he told her. I suspect that finding an unoccupied bedroom will be easier.
She pulled away a little, just far enough that she could see his face. Dragons, huh? Well, I killed the Lady of the Lake for you, sir.
He cupped her face in his hands. I'm sorry, Anna.
Te absolve indeed, she thought, faced with Charles's warm and undeniably living flesh. She would have killed the Fae over again. I'm not, she said. I love you. Angus sighed.
Lovebirds, he said.